Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 138 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, the UK's only dedicated sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. Delighted to say we're all back together again for another one of our summer podcasts. Pete is back from his stints as Pamela Anderson in Baywatch after a nice trip over to the States. So it's great to have Pete back on the show. And obviously Lee sitting there chomping away, as he always does, as we're about to record. But we're recording, well, not straight after, but the Everton's first proper pre-season match happened last night, if you like, overnight in Baltimore against Arsenal. Everton getting beat 2-0 there. It was good to see the Blues back. Good to see, obviously, our one new signing and James Tarkowski get 45 minutes. Good to see some of the youngsters get some game time as well. But obviously, you know, you can't read too much into these kind of games, especially the first one of pre-season. But Lee, I mean, I know you sat up and watched, you know, definitely the first half. But what are you taking from what we saw last night?
I only lasted the first half before I zonked out, to be honest. Look, it's first and foremost, and we say this every time, what's pre-season for is to get miles in the legs, isn't it? Get the fitness on board. And obviously going over to the States has been a early doors. You can see already the fan base there has been phenomenal. You know, building our sort of rapport with them over there. And I just thought we looked like a team. It was certainly in the first half I watched, we looked like a team that was very much our first pre-season game. You know, Arsenal, that's their third game that they've played. So you could see they were just so much sharper to the pass, sharper to the ball. That, you know, they swarmed all over us from the very get-go, didn't they? And they played at a high tempo, high intensity. And we obviously struggled to get out because they were pressing us right into, you know, into our own half. And, you know, occasionally we did break. We had a good break with Nkunku and possibly won their Calvert-Lewin, just couldn't quite get the shot off. But ultimately, look, you've got to remember, and the perspective is the key word here, you know, just saying off air then, you know, Arteta's had nearly three seasons with this team. He's built an identity. He signed players. You know, I think their net spend is just shy of 300 million last time I looked. So, you know, they've signed another forward now who I think will be a top signing for them in Jesus, by the way, because they were a centre forward away from being, you know, I think a top four team last season, Arsenal, and they only just missed out on that. So they just look really sharp. You know, and credit to them, you know, they've got a system, they know how to play it. The manager knows what, you know, has had time with those players and wants them to play in a certain way. So just a bit of perspective. And I missed the second half. I know you stayed up and watched it, Mike, but some of the reports I've read via The Athletic and a few others on Twitter, you know, we looked pretty decent second half. I know we made 11 changes, they made changes. But, you know, I heard Tarkowski played really, really well and showed, you know, showed how good a defender he is, how much of a leader he is, which is great to see. And then I heard that, you know, Reece Welsh and Warrington and Mills, you know, showed themselves to be decent players. So, but you've got to take the positives in these sort of things, you know. It's as simple and straightforward as that. It's the first pre-season game. We go on to Minnesota now, and we'll have another run out there as well.
Yeah, I think people have got to remember. You know, I don't know what I expected last night. In terms of us, quite clearly, it was our first pre-season game, so we were going to be rusty. You know, we look at the goals, it was down to mistakes, you know, seeing us do silly things, which we saw last season. There's just too much of a knee-jerk reaction again. You know, let's get it right. The most important thing about pre-season is to get your fitness first and foremost, and then to come through, hopefully, 3 or 4 pre-season games unscathed and not picking up any kind of major injuries. That's the key. And I think people's, you know, for want of a better term, heads are falling off because, you know, we conceded a couple of sloppy goals. And I mean, I've had people comment on some of our things on Twitter and Instagram, thinking, oh, we're going to get relegated. We've got no midfield. You know, we haven't replaced Richarlison. Season doesn't start for 3 weeks. We had this discussion. I know I did on the last podcast. And it's as much as we'd all prefer players to come in, new players to come in and be there for the start of pre-season, it doesn't always happen that way. It's not a perfect world. I mean, you've still got Leicester City, who, as far as from what I can remember, haven't signed a player. You know, so Everton have got one player through the door. We're going to discuss, obviously, current links shortly. There's a lot of links out there. But people have just got to calm themselves down. Let's understand what pre-season is all about. And like you said, Arsenal played, that's the third game of pre-season last night. They're ahead of the game. They look sharp against a side who looked rusty. It was just trying to find their feet. And let's all relax. I mean, Pete, I know you said before we recorded, you picked up on the highlights this morning. What did you see? What are you taking from that first pre-season game?
Like Lee said, you've got to view it for what it is, which is exactly that, a pre-season match, which is about building fitness, getting the group back together, you know, Lampard assessing the squad, figuring out, you know, which of the younger players that might play a little bit more of a role in the first group at the start of the season. So I can understand why fans are anxious, especially given what happened last season and the position we were in. I feel the anxiety myself, but like you say, perspective's needed because of the financial situation we're in. We all know that any business we do is likely to come toward the latter half of the window. We want to get things right. You know, the fans are talking about not wanting to make mistakes again. You know, and Everton have been quite heavily scrutinised for that. So it's quite clear that the club are trying hard to get things right. And I don't want the Richarlison comments to sort of overshadow us, because we've got to move on now. But I do think that will have played a role. You know, the team that was out, that's the first time we've sort of played without what I'd consider, and I think a lot of Blues would consider, to be our talisman. He's certainly been our talisman last season. So that will have had a big impact on the group. And, you know, that's a back five that have never played together before. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think the centre halves have ever played together in a three. I don't think Mina, Godfrey, and Holgate. I don't think they've ever started a game in a three. So, you know, we're playing with a really experimental setup, and even for the manager to come out as well after the game and say, "Well, look, actually, this is sort of by virtue of the players that I've got available, not the system that maybe I would have liked to have gone with," or, you know, he was sort of really alluding to he would like to have had more options, particularly in midfield. You have got to take a big step back, I think, and just, you know, maybe judge things after the Kiev friendly.
Yeah, I think, and it was only this morning I actually got the comments from the manager. He did say that the formation, the setup that we played last night, so we started with the three centre halves, two centre mids, and then two wing backs, if you like, and then three attackers. He did say that he's played that way because of the personnel that we've got on the actual tour. So he is, you know, we are actively looking for a number six. He's constantly in conversation with Kevin Thelwell. So the idea is that we're not going to be playing three at the back, three centre halves when the season kicks off. So we are going to need to get a player in that role sooner rather than later, so we can get back to playing, you know, a 4-3-3 and so on. But it's like I say, you know, you don't learn a great deal, especially from that first game of pre-season. You know, like we said, it's about fitness. It's about players getting, you know, minutes into the legs. And we made 11 changes at half time. So all the players who played last night got 45 minutes, which was great. In difficult conditions, you know, it was warm. It was humid. So it's one of those games where you tick it off as the first obstacle has been overcome in pre-season. And we move on to Wednesday, when hopefully we're a little bit sharper. Some players will probably get an hour as opposed to 45 minutes. And we might see, you know, might see a couple of other players who didn't feature in last night's game, when obviously we played the second game of the US tour. But it's
you've got to remember as well, Mike, don't you agree? I'm sure you boys agree. You know, let's be brutally honest here. This is an Arsenal team that, you know, only just missed out on the Champions League last season. This is an Everton team, you know, that, you know, stayed up by the skin of our teeth. You know, and there's obviously several reasons for that, down to, you know, the management appointment and injuries and everything else. We'd like to think the squad is probably higher than that. But I think it probably is. But point is, you know, this is a decent Arsenal team. Let's not get away from that. This is a decent team. I know we stayed up against Palace and we went to their gaff, and there was obviously a, you know, massive sort of elation from having to stay up, and they beat us comfortably on the last game of the season. But they've got some top players, Arsenal, and they've added to that. They've got some top players. You know, Saka yesterday looked really, really good. He had a great season last season. You know, I mean, Martinelli on the other side, again, pacey, quick, looked dangerous. And then, as I said, look at Jesus. I mean, look, it was poor defending from us, but he's taken that goal brilliantly. What a first touch, you know, and buried it. So, you know, you've got to remember this Arsenal team now, whether we like it or not, is again going to push the top, you know, top four teams in the league this season, aren't they? And, you know, they're a decent, it's a hard opener, you know, to go there. And as I said, you know, they've played two more games as well. They got back a week earlier than us. And it showed, you know, there is a level difference as well, and the fact they look fitter. So there's no point, like you just said there, getting carried away and thinking, oh, you know, we should be beating these, or we should be, you know, what are we doing? And hold on, Lampard's going to need time now. And he said it in his pre-season interview, hasn't he? He's going to need time now to try and, you know, build the Everton team he wants to see in his identity, play the way he wants us to play. Now, he did experiment with that when he came in halfway through the season and realised quite quickly, now we're going to have to change things here and be difficult to beat to stay up. And kudos to him, he changed it and he did that. But it's going to take time for him to build this team as well. And we'll probably see this at the start of the season, you know, in the first few months of the season. We're probably going to have a few indifferent results. But we need to, again, the key word there, perspective. If we end up finishing, you know, dare I say, like 12th or something like that, then at the end of the season, but we can see signs of progress, then that, for me, is as horrible as it sounds to say out loud, that's progress, isn't it? That's not a bad season. So we need to remember that, you know. And I was hoping, I am hoping that the scare we had last season might reset some fans' expectations and think, hang on a minute, you know, I know we're a big club and we've got a brilliant following, and you know, we've got no divine right to finish top six or seven just because of the size of the club we are. You know, we need to be able to just build slowly, small steps to build it and add to the squad intelligently and things like that.
Yeah, most definitely. But before we wrap up on last night, one player that we think we should touch on is the new signing, James Tarkowski. Come on at half time. I quite enjoyed watching him, I've got to be honest. He was certainly leading that back three. He was very vocal a couple of times later on. He did exactly what we want a defender to do. He went over to protect Stanley Mills when Pepe wanted to pick a fight with him, and Tarkowski was over there straight away, and Pepe soon backed off. And then within about 20 seconds, he then put one on, or left one on, another Arsenal player, which caused a bit of a melee. And he sort of backed away, as if not, you know, just walking away. And as about five Arsenal players try and get anywhere near him. And that's exactly, I think, what we've lacked at times over the last few years, is a player like that with a little bit of bite. He's what I'd say of a proper defender, and someone who can certainly help other defenders through a game, whether it be Michael Keane, Mason Holgate, Ben Godfrey. He's one of those players who will certainly lead from the back almost. And it was good to see him come on and put in a really solid performance, some decent tackles in the second half. You can see obviously why the manager wants to bring him in. And looks, again, we can't take that much from what performance, but looks to be an astute signing and one, I think, you know, when we get to that Chelsea game, he'll definitely be starting, that's for sure. I think he just brings that assurance to our defence. So great to see him. As I said earlier on, great to see some of the youngsters get a bit of time. Lewis Warrington, Stanley Mills, he was excellent as well. And on we go to the second match next week as we move on. And yet again, get more minutes in the legs and hopefully look a little bit sharper after another few days training. But we'll wrap up the Arsenal game there. Transfers, as usual, all the talk at the moment. As we said, ideally we'd have a couple more through the door before we went to the States. We haven't. But the talk and the rumours have not stopped, and we're going to discuss them after this short break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back to the second part of this week's Unholy Trinity podcast. And it's back to transfers. That time of the year, isn't it, where, you know, every day you're looking for fresh rumours, updates on potential targets. And one which has come out of nowhere, really, since we last recorded a couple of weeks ago, was a couple of days back now, and it's the emergence of Maxwell Cornet from Burnley. It appears that Everton are now at the front of the queue in negotiations with Burnley to try and secure his signature. As things stood on Friday, we were the most likely destination for him. And that would seem to suggest that it's going to be him over Emmanuel Dennis, who, you know, talk seems to have cooled in regards to him and Watford. And apparently there was no official bid about has actually gone in for Dennis as we speak today. But I know, Lee, we had a chat, didn't we, on Friday about it. What's your thoughts on Cornet as a player?
I think my thoughts are slightly different to you. I think he's a decent player, but he's not what I would call a top player. But then we're not really in the market to sign top players, are we, now with the restrictions we've got? But and I think at the end of the day, I personally don't think he's there as a Richarlison replacement. By the way, I think he's more of a winger, left winger. You know, if we're going to sign someone to replace Richie, we need someone that can play through the middle as well. You know, if something happened to Dom, for example, I don't particularly want Salomon Rondon leading the line. Do you know what I mean? I know at his previous club in Lyon, he was playing left wing back as well at times. So that'll be interesting if we do end up playing three at back occasionally, whether he will play in that position. But yeah, it's a little bit underwhelming. Let's see if anything develops from it. I believe his release clause is 17.5 million. I don't want us paying 17.5 million for him personally. I think if we can get that a little bit lower, more like around about the 12 mark-ish, if we can. Whether that's possible, I don't know. Well, let's see. I personally, I slightly disagree with you. I still think we may go in for Dennis, but I think Everton are playing sort of hardball on that. I know there's been no official bid, but I can see us maybe going towards the end of the window when Watford will almost be forced to sell, because I don't think he's, him and Sarr will definitely, I don't think they'll be there at the start of their season, or maybe at the start, but certainly not by the end of the window. I know Dennis scored 2 for them yesterday in a friendly. And I just think with Dennis, he's a little bit more versatile in the fact that he can play across all front 3 positions. And I think he's better in the air, and he's obviously got a physical presence about him as well. I know, Pete, you liked the look of Cornet at times last season, didn't you? So you're probably slightly different to me. I just don't think he's... I think he'll be a good squad addition. I just don't think he'll really push that first 11.
I think he's got good technical ability. I mean, I think most Evertonians will remember that he got the winner against us. And I think he also scored one, didn't he, that was a contender for goal of the season, that volley on the left foot. I don't know if people remember that. But I think last season was his best return in any season for goals. And, you know, to get 9 goals in something like, was it 26 appearances, you know, in a Burnley side that went down, I mean, that's not to be sniffed at all. I didn't actually think he played as much football as he had. I thought they'd used him mostly off the bench, but Mike pointed out that he'd played actually most of the games for them until he picked up a couple of knocks. I think with both Cornet and Dennis, they're both gambles. I think because obviously they've had one season each in the Premier League. And sometimes I struggle a bit when these sort of stats come out comparing like Dennis and Cornet to, you know, to Richarlison, because I think you're comparing one season.
Yeah, aren't totally. You? Small sample size, isn't it?
Yeah, one season against a player that's, you know, an established Premier League performer. So, it's a gamble.
I think the thing with Cornet, which the point was made on Friday as well, if we did play this three at the back system, you've then he did play when he was at Lyon as a left wing back. So you've got the option of playing him there. So defensively, he's actually quite sound as well. So you've got that flexibility within another player in the squad who can play a variety of positions. And some would argue he probably played his best football in that position in France. I know, obviously, it's a different league. But it just shows you the flexibility that a signing can have. And like Pete said, I think it was 9 goals, 2 assists in 26, 27 games last season, which isn't a bad return for a player who played for a side. He wasn't particularly attacking. I know he caused those problems. I know he scored against us as well. But you think he missed 2 games through injury. And he really missed him, Burnley, and he only spent time on the bench after that injury, really. So quite a reliable player, played a fair amount of games percentage wise anyway for them since he signed. So it's an interesting one. It's a slightly cheaper option than Emmanuel Dennis. I'm surprised. I am surprised Burnley are even speaking to us after what's gone on and the complaints they put into the Premier League. But as like I've said on previous shows, football's a business, and if Everton are the only side who are in for a certain player, then they know they've got to sell. I think Vincent Kompany, obviously now the Burnley manager, left them out of the squad for their pre-season friendly on Saturday and basically said, we've got to prepare for life after him. So he's definitely on his way out. It's just how quick we can get the deal over the line, because all signs now point to him coming to us. So I'd expect that to develop probably quite quickly next week if it's going to happen. But
do you think, Mike? Do you agree with me and think that we could potentially get Dennison as well as Cornet, or do you think it'll just be Cornet? Because I can't see Cornet being a direct replacement for Richarlison personally.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it'll be him. I think it'll be Cornet or Dennis. It won't be both. I think Gibbs White is still definitely he will come in regardless, or we're still after him regardless of Cornet and Dennis. Obviously, the lad at Chelsea, Brozier, who's very much, according to The Athletic, Everton's number one target. So if you brought in, obviously, finances permitted, Corne, Gibbs White, and Brozier, then that'll be the three, wouldn't it?
We've been heavily linked with that. Branks from Wolfsburg as well, haven't we?
Yeah, interesting on that.
He's obviously a midfielder. I know we've had Tom Long on a few times. Tom's doing some great templates at the minute. If anyone's not on that, get on it. But he did his little template on Bronx. I was looking at that the other day, and he was saying that, you know, he's the ideal midfielder, really, that we're looking for in terms of profile, you know, in terms of his ability to press, win the ball, and carrying a little bit of a threat as well. I wonder if that Bronx maybe, you know, be either him or Gibbs White, or, you know what I mean, rather than both of them. It'll be interesting to see. Obviously, we were linked with Traore the other day as well, weren't we? Whilst we were speaking to him about Gibbs White, whether that they were offering him as an alternative, remains to be seen. But it's clearly, obviously, Thelwell knows some of these guys, doesn't he, at Wolves. The guy we've brought in to replace Unsworth as well, obviously, was from Wolves, wasn't he? So they clearly know the character of some of these players, which is, you know, just as important these days, isn't it, in terms of knowing them as individuals. And Traore is an interesting one for me, just quickly on that. I know it sort of split the fan base when it got mentioned, but if we could get him for around about 10 million, I'd have him all day. I know you can turn around and say, yeah, look, he can sometimes be, well, in general, he's what stopped him from progressing to the next level has been his goal scoring and assists. You know, he tends to be a bit wasteful when he gets into the final third. But in terms of just being a sheer threat, especially with the five subs rule now going forward next season, can you imagine if we're in a tight game against anyone and suddenly you've got Traore coming off the bench for half an hour? You know what I mean? I mean, if I'm playing fullback and he's coming on and oiling himself up, I'm thinking, I'm not wanting to play against this lad.
No, yeah, he's a funny one, isn't Traore, because he flatters to deceive at the best of times. And that's, you know, when you watch him, he's got all the attributes to be a top, top player, hasn't he? He's so quick. So he can go from defence to attack very, very quickly. That transition that we'd be looking for, it would be ideal with, you know, having a player like him playing. It's just obviously his output is not great, is it? You know, his goals and assists, you know, his figures are not fantastic. And it's a shame, really, because if he could bring that to his game, then he'd be a £100 million player, but he just doesn't. And that's the gamble with him. As much as he knows the Premier League, when you bring in a player like that, we need someone who's going to make an impact. And we can't carry another player who is not going to offer that much in way of goals and assists. You know,
if you look at his chance creation, mate, it's right up there. And I think, obviously, it's the age-old argument, you know, the assists in terms of stats is a really sort of difficult one to place, isn't it? And a lot of people who work in the stats game say that, because at the end of the day, an assist is exactly what it is. You can lay it on for a player, he can miss, can't he? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So you haven't got much control over the end product. All you can do is create the chance. But, you know, if you consider he's 26, potentially if it is 10 million, 10 million, then you think, like, you know, he's played over 200 games in the Premier League for different teams, mainly Wolves. You know, that it's not as if he's like 32 and we're signing him, you know, like Walcott at the end of his career. You know what I mean? So I just think if he is available for that, and just through, you know, he will draw players to him just because of the type of player he is. You know what I mean? Like you just said, their transition. If you are sitting off against a team, against the City or against him, he had that memorable game against City, I remember, for Wolves, where he got two goals on the counter attack because he's an absolute animal to mark. You know what I mean? You can't shrug him off the ball. Like you just said, he's absolutely lightning, one of the quickest in the league. And, you know, for that sort of money, I just think he would be a shrewd addition. I mean, what do you think, Pete, if you got Traore?
I think it's a big gamble for our financial situation. I think maybe in previous seasons, if, you know, similar price, similar player, similar age, I agree with you. You know, absolutely go for it. But I think the question is now, do we have 10 million plus, he's probably going to command a high wage package. You know, do we have the money to risk on a player that really, you know, really might not work out and can be quite temperamental, can be quite difficult to manage? I agree with you. On his day, he's unplayable. he's absolutely unplayable. But he seems to be a bit, I suppose, a bit like Delafeu, and in the sense of when he's on, he's unbeatable. But when he's off, he's a 5 or 6 out of 10. And you're hauling him off after 50, 60 minutes. You know, again, question how you get the best out of him. He's also coming toward the end of his career. You know, how many years are you gonna get from him? You know, maybe another one or two in the Premier League.
I think he's only 26, isn't he? He's only 26, so
I thought he was older.
He's young. No, so he's younger than you think. Yeah, so he's only 26.
He's been around so long.
I know, so I mean, he's been around, like, he was at Borough, wasn't he? And he's like, obviously they got him from Barcelona B. I was like you. I thought he was like late 20s, but he's not. He's only 26, so he's been around for a while. You know, for effectively still someone that's now approaching their prime, really. So for that sort of figure, I mean, look, if it is 10 mil, obviously it won't be 10 mil cash up front. And what we do know is that the money we've had to, you know, we've had to sell our best player, like you said, Pete, our talisman, for 50 million. Now the sad thing is, because of, you know, the financial fair play rules or whatever they're called in the Premier League now, is, you know, we have to make that 50 million, you know, spread across about five players, don't we? That's where we are, sadly, right now. Where other clubs are going out there. Don't get me started on the likes of Chelsea and people like who apparently had a 1.5 billion debt when they were bought out, you know, owing to Abramovich. Yet they're still going to spend 200 million this summer. And then, you know, don't even get me going on Barcelona, who've basically mortgaged their future on the TV rights. And, you know, they haven't even paid Frankie de Jong yet. They can go out and sign Rafinha for 50 million. And they owe Frankie de Jong 17 million in wages. So let's not go there with that. We seem to be getting penalised for our misdoings in the transfer market. But back to Traore, if we did get him, it would probably be a few million quid up front and then obviously, you know, spread across the rest of the contract. So I just think for that and adding to the squad, and as I said, this five subs rule going forward next year, you know, we do need sort of strength in depth as well. It's not just the first 11, isn't it? If he was on the bench, like I said, and we were in a tight game and he was coming on, he'd certainly get people off their seat, wouldn't he, with the way he plays?
If you could get him for the right deal, and if we could get him in addition to, let's say, the other core signings that we need to make,
exactly.
You know, another centre mid, another wide player, someone that can also maybe play in the middle if, you know, if Dom's not available, then yeah, bite your arm off. I think it'd be a sensible gamble. But what I wouldn't want to see is for him to be, I guess, like an out and out replacement for, you know, for either Richarlison or for a wing, because I just think it'd be too big a gamble. You know, why would Wolves let him go? You know, and his time at Barca sort of fizzled out really, and they seem quite happy for him to leave. So it's sort of raising some of the wrong questions for me.
Yeah, well, Wolves apparently, by looking at the reports, want him out. Bruno Lage doesn't seem to rate him. But the thing is as well, you've got to remember a few times he's played at right wing back, hasn't he, in a three. So, you know, and that again gives us a little bit more cover in that place. You know, I know Coleman's coming into the season. There's rumours that he's going to miss the start of the season through injury. Obviously, Nathan Patterson, chance for him now to step up and take the shirt. But, you know, I mean, if anything, he'll push Damari Gray on the right side. In terms of, you know, trying to push him for his place. So, I don't know. I think it could be, if we could get the deal right, I think it could be quite a shrewd little signing for me personally. Do you agree, Mike? Or are you sort of a bit ambivalent on it?
Yeah, I think, like you both said, it all depends on what other business we do and the impact that it may have on our finances. I think if we're going to sign him, it'll be later on. I think it could be dependent on who else comes in. I don't think the price is a bad price. If £10 million is what it is, then, you know, how many players you've got the experience that he's got in the Premier League can you buy for that kind of money? And who's of his age as well? You know, so his best years are ahead of him. As I say, the concern just lies around his output for me. But I think that one might run a little bit, but it all just depends, as I say, in terms of who else gets brought in. That's for sure. But we'll leave transfers there. I just want to round the show off quickly if we can, just to have a brief chat about the communication that's come out this week from Farhad Moshiri. There was again, you know, there was some banners placed outside the ground in protest to Farhad Moshiri and Bill Kenwright, and then obviously the communication came out from him to basically say, you know, he's not selling the club. There's no for sale sign above the door at Goodison Park. He's open to a minority investor to basically help fund Bramley Moore. And he's committed to improving the squad for Frank Lampard. And he said there will be new signings. What are our thoughts on that? Lee, are you happy with that kind of communication from Farhad Moshiri?
Yeah, I think I put a tweet out after he'd done it and said, basically, look, a lot of fans were giving him stick in terms of what he said, you know, and about not selling the club. Clearly, the fans have now got it in the head, right, we need to get him out. Maybe there's some truth in that, don't know. But at the end of the day, he's communicated through the official channels. He's updated us on what happened in terms of the conversations between them and the American consortium. So, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it. You know, we criticised him heavily last season for the club or the club and him for not coming out and communicating with us at certain times of the season in terms of what's going on behind the scenes. He's come out. He's not done it through Jim White in TalkSport. He's done it through the official channels, by all accounts. And at the end of the day, like, you can't then criticise him for that, whether we like what he's got to hear or not. So he's updating us on the situation. I think it's clear as day that he was never really looking to sell anyway. I think he was looking to sell a stake potentially up to 30% to help some cash flow to fund the stadium. I think that's what he was looking for. And it turns out this American consortium then were then like, well, are you interested in selling? They obviously then signed an agreement to say, look, we've got a couple of weeks now to look at the club as a whole, look at the books. He's probably entertained it and then dismissed it. You know, at the end of the day, he's the majority shareholder. You know, they may have lowballed him and offered something nowhere near what he thinks may be the price. So he's updated us on that. And I think that was the remit all along. He's committed to finishing this stadium. I think we all pretty much know when he's done that and the stadium is up and hopefully we've got a decent team to fill it, that will probably be the time he may exit, because that's where he'll probably get his biggest return on his investment, and then so be it. So, yeah, I just think, you know, he's communicated with us. He's updated us on the situation. I haven't got a problem with that.
You said the same piece. Are you satisfied with what has come out? For want of a better phrase, does it put your mind at rest? And as far as Monsieur, you said, offer some reassurance?
I think it's a bit like the last statement. He said, I really like what he's saying. He's saying all the right things. He's, you know, if I made a list of things that I'd like him to say and I'd like to hear from him, a lot of those things would be on the list. That, you know, new signings are going to come in, trust the process, judge things at the end of the window, that there's going to be, you know, financial stability in terms of the future of the club and the ownership of the club, that, you know, that there's reassurances and guarantees on the stadium. Them all the things as a fan, I think I'm wanting to hear from the club. But I suppose, given recent history, you can't help but have doubts and think, well, you know, are these things going to materialise? So I hope for his sake that they do, because I think that is the platform to restoring fan confidence that we've been talking about so much, you know, over the past sort of 6 to 12 months in particular. Better communication from the club, but they've also got to deliver on the things that they're sharing with us. I can understand why fans continue to be angry, but I agree with Lee. I like what he said. I like the way that he's done it. I think it's appropriate to do it through sort of official club channels, rather than, you know, sort of strange, you know, backdoor ways of communicating with fans that just for me wouldn't make sense. But they've got to deliver. Or Moshiri's got to deliver on the things that he's effectively promising, really. You know, some of these statements will definitely come back to haunt him if it turns out to be just PR.
No, yeah. I can understand fans' anxiety 100%. You know, at the end of the day, you know, you could arguably say with justification that, you know, it's been totally mismanaged. You know, I think there's no debate about that in terms of how the club's been managed from the top. And I understand the fans' anxiety as well around, you know, well, you know, the hierarchy still in place, you know, Bill's still in there negotiating transfers. Denise is still in there in her role. Rumours that she was potentially leaving at some point. So, you know, I can understand that, and I really can. You know, there probably does need to be change. Well, for me, there does need to be changes at the top. he has made changes, or that, you know, in terms of since they've done this review and they're bringing in the likes of Kevin Thelwell, you know, understanding that some of the roles need to change. Unsworth's left, Ferguson's left. So, you know, there have been some smaller changes there. And, you know, it, as I said, it's a bit by bit process, and I can understand fans' anxiety around that. But if he has come out and communicated with us, updated us on that situation, then so be it. You know, if this American firm did come in and did take over, it doesn't suddenly mean we've suddenly got 500 million to spend. You know what I mean, the situation financially is the situation financially. It's still the same. You know, we still have to run a solvent football club at the end of the day, and that's the whole point, that it's there, whether we agree with it or not. And I don't particularly agree with the way some clubs can bend around it, but that's another conversation. So, yeah, so for me, I'm glad he's come out and communicated with us and updated us on the situation. So let's see, as I said, and I agree with exactly what you said in terms of let's assess our window at the end of the window. Sadly, we haven't got the cash up front. I think this is what's stopping some of these deals going through. We're trying to stretch 50 million across four or five players, maybe a little bit more in the kitty. So we have to be savvy with that, and we can't just get a deal over the line by saying, okay, we'll have Morgan Gibbs-White, there's 15 million up front. You know what I mean? So we're just not in that position. I think that's what's preventing some of these deals from getting over the line.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's got to be an acceptance there, whether we like it or not. Obviously, we know the mistakes that are being made. We know the situation that we're in. But when it could be isolated transfers on their own, that's where we are. And that's where we've got to call for a little bit of patience. There is another planned protest next Saturday at Goodison Park, arranged by the 27 campaign, which obviously is another situation where they're calling for change, basically, in regards to the board and certain board members, and, you know, not accepting the mistakes that have been made in the past. So there's still a lot of negativity around that. And, you know, you see it across social media. Some agree with it, some don't agree with it. Some are on board. And we all want it. We all want a better functioning football club. You know, we all want to go back in time and change the mistakes that are being made. And, you know, I also agree we shouldn't accept mediocrity as well. But I mean, I don't want to delve too much into that because, listen, that is what it is. And, you know, we know how important us as fans have been to getting the club out of the mire last season. And, you know, we know there's a lot of ill feeling towards certain board members as well. But let's, you know, as far as you said, as you said, Lee, let's judge the window when the window's over. Let's see who we can bring in. I still think there's going to be three or four players through the door, to be honest. And I think that the side that we saw last night in our first pre-season game will look a lot different come that first game of the season against Chelsea, and most definitely at the end of the transfer window as well. But that's us for today. I thought it was important to check in, have a chat about obviously pre-season, how things are going. Great to have the three of us back together as well before I go off on my travels in about 8 or 9 days' time. But we will look to record again next week. Season's only around the corner. Look forward to seeing Everton in some more pre-season action over the next couple of weeks as well. So we will catch you same time next week.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three Blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.